Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 170. And in the last lesson, we were in Isaiah 11. Let's continue from Isaiah 11 and verse 11, where we read about the restoration of the people of Israel who were taken to captivity. And they were taken to captivity by several nations that were involved in it. And as many other places we read, Edom is one of the chief culprits there, of the enemy of Israel. And so we read here in verse 11, the locations where they were taken to captivity. It shall come to pass, God says, in that day that the Eternal, or the Lord, shall set his hand again, the second time, because the first time, they were just brought, well, you can see it either, in the sense of the first captivity that he brought them back from Babylon, and also this very return of the captivity in this age, and that's probably is a reference to this one, the last one, and not the first one, because there are only a very small portion of them were brought back, about 35,000 or 45,000, and here it is, we've got over 5 million people of Judah there, and other Israelites among them, so probably is reference to this one more than the first one. And so he said, the second time again, to recover the remnant of his people who are left. Now, where are they going to be? They're going to be in Assyria, and as we mentioned, Assyria, anciently, we all know, was in what is known today as part of Syria, the area obviously closer to the Euphrates, and then part of Babylon, or Iraq today. And that land is still there, and there are still Assyrians from the ancient Assyrian Empire who are still left behind. And many of them are still there, not as many as used to be, obviously, but they're not few, they're not three or four. They're still there in present-day Syria. They're actually the minority in the land, and it's from that minority that the ruling party of the former President Assad and now his son, they come from that ruling minority, and they have the same qualities, basically, as the ancient Assyrians. Very ruthless people. And so, this is what he's talking about. Basically, all localities, you see, it's not one all the way down in Europe and then all the rest all around. No, he's speaking about people who are in the local areas. Assyria and Egypt, from Pathros and Cush, in English they say Kash, as I mentioned earlier, Kash in Hebrew means straw, it's Cush, which means basically the area of Ethiopia, and that's more Africa, and apparently the children of Israel are going to end up again in these territories as captives. Now we are talking about this present time, and nobody today that we know of, of the children of Judah or the children of Israel, you know, speaking about a community, we just don't find any community there in these areas. And yet God said they are going to end up there. You don't even find a Jewish community in Egypt anymore, you know. There are very few individuals there, but the overwhelming majority of the large Jewish community that used to be there is no longer there. But here he's talking about the remnant of his people who are and have been taken into captivity, and we have other prophecies that describe that. Moses describes the captivity of Israel, that he's going to end up in Egypt, where he said to the people of Israel, the end time, God is going to bring them by ships into Egypt, and they're going to be sold there into slaves, and nobody will buy them. You see, in other words, there will be so many of them, it just would not be worth much to the natives. And so this is what he's talking about here. They're going to be left from Assyria and Egypt, from Patros and Cush, from Elam, as we mentioned earlier. Elam is in present-day Iran, and Shinar, and that's in Babylon. You see, that's the very land where Abraham came from. And from Hamat and the islands of the sea. Now, Hamat is way up there also, in Lebanon. And so the people of Israel, both of Judah and of Israel, are going to be taken to captivity, and they will be found in these places. Some people may ask, you know, how do the children of Israel get to that place? You know, we know about the children of the southern kingdom of Judah, but how do the people of Israel or Joseph or others get there? Well, you know, look at the Persian Gulf crisis, and there's going to be a major one again in the future for them to end up in captivity in that place, which means more Israelites, probably hundreds of thousands, again, will be taken, in other words, will be sent over there, and therefore, since God is going to rise to punish his own people, he's going to allow the enemy to have the upper hand, and that's Brother Edom in Iraq, and they'll end up in captivity. And so he says this is where they're going to be, and also in many other places, the islands of the sea. And he will set up a banner for the nations. You see, that's after he comes, obviously. And will assemble the outcasts of Israel. You know, he's going to make all the remnant of those armies that he destroyed around Jerusalem who came against him. He's going to make them go to all their nations and bring back the children of Israel, as well as going to make all nations of the earth. You know, they're going to fear and tremble before him, and they will bring the outcasts of Israel. You read in Isaiah 66 the description of how they're going to bring them back. And so he said he will assemble the outcasts of Israel and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners or wings of the earth. And they're going to be everywhere. They're going to be dispersed. They're going to be in captivity. They're going to be fleeing for their lives. They're going to be in conditions that are not very pleasant. And so he says in verse 13, also the envy of Ephraim shall depart, and the adversaries of Judah shall be cut off. And that's Brother Edom in the area, the Palestinians they call them today, and others of the Arab nations who are not Ishmaelites, but they are from Edom, like Iraq, like Yemen, Teman, and many in the little sheikdoms there, and many even in Saudi Arabia who are along the coast that remain there, because many of the Edomites were there, and that was their territory anciently, and that Medina was their capital, and some of them are still left behind there. They've not all departed from that area. And mind you, being mixed a little bit with Ishmael, obviously many of them will stay around, and many others went somewhere else. So you find Edom everywhere, just like you find Jacob and Judah everywhere. And so he said, the envy of Ephraim shall depart, and the adversaries of Judah shall be cut off. And Ephraim shall not envy Judah, and Judah shall not harass Ephraim. That's a problem that they've had together, and unfortunately, between them, you know, sort of a rivalry. Just, you know, it's not bad like Esau, Jacob. But they've had a lot of rivalry there. As a matter of fact, even Ephraim had a lot of rivalry with Reuben, the firstborn. Because Reuben also, like Esau, he lost the birthright and he didn't like it. Ephraim got it. That's what the rebellion of Korah was all about also. He had with him the chief princess of Reuben, who thought, you know, we should have had the leadership and not you, Levi. But Ephraim and Judah, unfortunately, have had this rivalry and envy and this problem between them, and God says he's going to put an end to it. And that problem basically began from the land of Egypt. And Ephraim shall not envy Judah, and to this very day, you know, a lot of the anti-Semitism that comes from the Anglo-Saxons, so to speak, especially the Ephraimites, less from Manasseh, is because of that envy, and that envy has been there from the beginning of time. That's why they separated also, and they had the now and then wars between the northern and southern kingdom of Israel. And even when they departed from the land, lost their identity, you know, they didn't lose their envy of Judah. And he said, Judah shall not harass Ephraim, but they shall fly, you know, together. Now I see they're all together there. They're the remnant. God is going to bring them back. And now God is going to tell them, now you've got a job. That's like when he brought them out of the land of Egypt, he brought them to the land of Canaan, he said, you've got a job now. I'm going to give you the land, but you're going to have to go and fight for it. You see, it would not be handed to you on a silver platter. And only this time they will do exactly what God told them to do, unlike the first time where they allowed many of the Canaanites to remain behind. Now that it's going to be a total decimation of the population in the area that will refuse to move out and will refuse to obey the God or the will of the God of Jacob. And so this is where you find them now. And they shall fly down upon the shoulder of the Philistines. Now the Palestinians are still there. Many of them are Edomites. You see, or Amalek, which is also from Edom, and some of them are Canaanites. And so they're going to, it says, fly down upon the shoulder of the Philistines toward the west. That means along the coast, the Mediterranean, that's where they are. And together they shall plunder the people of the east. And on the east you find Jordan, you find Saudi Arabia, you find Iraq, you find all those nations that also are enemies of Israel. And some of them are Edomites, like Iraq. In Jordan you find the children of Ammon and Moab. And then further down, you know, you find the Ishmaelites. In the south you obviously found also the Ishmaelites of Egypt. And so it says, together, Judah and Ephraim, it's not going to be the scenario that you find today where both Ephraim and Manasseh, you know, America and Britain and other of the Israelite nations, like Reuben and others, they're putting pressure on Judah to give up the land that belongs to them also, to give it up to the enemy, to give it to the Philistines, give it to the Edomites, give it to the Amalekites, you know. And here it is, they're going to have to fight for it, and that's going to be a turn of event for them. The land that pressured Judah to give up, they're going to have to fight back to get it, you know, for themselves. And so this is exactly what they are doing here. Together, you know, not separately, not fighting against Judah, but together with Judah, they shall plunder the people of the east. Today when they find the Jews now and then do it, you know, they condemn them for it. And now they're going to find themselves doing it themselves. They shall lay their hand on Edom. You see, Edom is still there. Still in the territory, both among the Palestinians, both in the land of Iraq, Babylon. Got to bring an end to it. In particular, you know, in that area. And of course, wherever Edom is also, and Moab, and the people of Ammon shall obey them. You see, once they lay hands on Edom and Moab and Ammon, you know, and the people of Jordan, they're all going to obey them just like they did many times in the past, because that was the decree that God issued, you know, in the giving of the birthright or the blessing to Jacob from the, you know, from the moment that he was in the belly of his mother. He said the younger is going to be the master, you know, and the older is going to serve the younger. And Edom, whether he likes it or not, the remnant of Edom and the Jordanians and all the others are going to obey them, and God is going to bring it about. And so here we read again in verse 15, the Lord will utterly destroy the tongue of the sea of Egypt with his mighty wind and will shake his fist over the river. So it's talking about the Nile and the Euphrates. From both sides, since people are going to be brought back, the people of Israel, from both sides, you see, as we read earlier, the children of Israel are going to be in captivity in Egypt and in Ethiopia, that's in the south, and they're going to be also in the north. And so God is going to smite both rivers on both sides. And he's going to do it, as I said, he will strike it in seven streams and make men cross over a dry shod. That's his own people. So he's going to have, you know, sort of a crossing of the Red Sea all over again, and also the crossing of the Euphrates for the people of Israel to come through. And there will be a highway for the remnant of his people who will be left from Assyria. That's the land up there in the north. Because that's how you cross the Euphrates. You go through the land of Assyria, and he's not talking about Germany. As it is, a lot of the people of modern Germany, they're going to come against Jerusalem to war, and they will be decimated there. And most Israelites don't live in Germany, or well, especially when you think about the American people, you know, or England, and Australia, and New Zealand, and Canada, you know, they're not coming to Israel from Germany. They're coming from wherever they are. And all whatever Israelites are going to be there, they'll come from there. But when God says those who will be left from Assyria, he's speaking about the ancient location there, And that's why the river would need to be dried so they can cross through. And of course, also those who will come from Europe and other places. And so those who will be left from Assyria, as it was for Israel in the day that he came up from the land of Egypt. And so it's going to be the Exodus, as is mentioned in other places. The day will come when the people of Israel will not say anymore, "The Lord lives who brought us out of the land of Egypt." But the Lord lives that brought us out of the land of the north. You see, and they're going to come from the north, and of course from all other places too, all corners of the earth. And then chapter 12, we read about the song of victory, of the salvation, a song of praise that Israel will give to their God, who would have delivered them. He's going to deliver them from Edom, from Ammon, from Moab, from Assyria, from all their enemies, from the Babylon, the present-day Babylon. And then he goes directly into the story of Babylon, because Babylon, in essence, the ancient Babylon and the modern Babylon, they're all linked. Linked physically, linked spiritually, linked in religion, linked in the genealogy of the people. You see? And so he goes directly to Babylon, and the ancient Babylon is the one that brought great destruction on Israel, that is on Judah, because Israel was already gone, but they afflicted also the people of Israel that were up there in their territory on the other side. And then, of course, also the future Babylon, that parts of the physical Babylonians moved to Europe, especially the people of Edom and others. And so they are linked also religiously and physically to the modern Babylon that is going to again dominate much of the earth, and God is going to bring destruction. But also you have to see the centrality of the people of Edom in it. At least one of the major players, even though they're not known as Babylonians. But when you realize what happened, you know, the fact that they went into Babylon and being to begin with the children of a man that came from Babylon, Abraham, so you can see the link there. And we have several accounts of them, even in the Bible, how many of them went back to Babylon. And when you read the genealogy of the kings of Edom, in Genesis 36, you realize that one of those kings that they had there came literally from Babylon, from Rehovot, which is by the river. And that's a description that is given there to where he came from. And so, see, they were all over, scattered all over the place. And Babylon is not far from ancient Edom used to be. All they had to do is just go down into the island or semi-island of Saudi Arabia. It's not a complete island. And then you go up there and you find yourself in Babylon. You just go east. And then you find yourself in Babylon. It's not that far. And that's where they spread. And so when he talks about Babylon here, you have to take that into account also. And then you begin to have a greater understanding of that. And so he speaks about Babylon, the destruction that he's going to bring on Babylon. And he's listing the enemies here in chapter 13, as he speaks about Babylon, the enemies of Israel. And there are many enemies of Israel. And the first one that he mentions here is Babylon, and then he mentions Assyria, and then the Philistines, and then Moab, and then Damascus, which is present-day Syria, and much of Syria was a part of Assyria, and that's the reason why it's called Syria, just short for Assyria. And the Greeks called the remnant of the Assyrians that were left behind the white Syrians, you know, short for Assyria, and they're still there today in some parts of Syria. They look just like Europeans, many of them. And of course, they got mixed a little bit, you know, to a degree with the natives, so obviously you see a mixture there. And the enemies, the people are also mentioned here are the people of Ethiopia or Cush and Egypt. In other words, as we just read earlier, the places from which God is going to bring back his people, because they were taken into captivity in those places. And Babylon is the first one that he mentioned. And mind you, the Persian Gulf War is a link to it. It's not a coincidence that it's happening there, and that the allies are there, and they're still there. You see? They're still there. They're not going to get out of that place, and it's going to be more a complex in the future, and that's going to be, unfortunately, a tragedy in the future for Israel, at least on a temporary basis. And then we read in chapter 13 and verse 9, "Behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel, with both wrath and fierce anger," so it's talking about the future, "to lay the land desolate, and he will destroy its sinners from it." God is going to bring a destruction to the sinners, and not only of Israel, but also of all the nations of the earth. And then he's describing, you know, the punishment he's going to bring upon them. In verse 11 he says, "I will punish the world for its evil," you know, the entirety of it, "and the wicked for their iniquity, and I will hold the arrogance of the proud." Now, this is one of the major qualities, you know, the major quality that was always linked to Edom and to Babylon and to Tyre. You see, the king of Tyre and many of the people there. Now, this was a common trait that they had. And, of course, others have it too, Assyria and others. But he's mentioning that in connection with this chapter is mostly about Babylon, the beginning of it. And so God is going to destroy that and that attitude in people. "And I will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible," that is the tyrants, "and I will make a mortal more rare than fine gold," because there aren't going to be many of them left behind after God begins to smite the earth. And God speaks here about the destruction that is going to bring upon them. And it's interesting, as you read the chapter and you continue to read, you know, the description of the destruction is going to bring upon them. And then you go to Isaiah 63, where he talks in specific about Edom, and then you talk about Psalm 137. Let's read here in verses 15 and 16. Speaking about the punishment is going to bring upon them. In this case, it's talking about Babylon. It says here in verse 15, "Everyone who is found will be thrust through, and everyone who is captured will fall by the sword. Their children also will be dashed to pieces before their eyes, and their houses will be plundered and their wives ravished." Now this is what they've done to the people of Israel in Zechariah 14, actually in 14, first 2-3 verses, when the armies of the surrounding nations and the armies of the great horror, the great beast, you know, the great armies from the north come, that's exactly what they're going to do. They're going to capture Jerusalem, take the half the city it says into captivity, and they're going to ravish the women, you know, and destroy a lot of innocent people there. And so he is saying this is exactly what he's going to do to them. And if you remember in Psalm 137, when the children of Israel were bemoaning their fate, and they were singing the song, you know, by the river of Babylon, well, that's exactly what you read there, that they said about Brother Edom. First they talk about Babylon, that took them into captivity, but since Babylon also had elements of Edom among them, they also directed their plea to God to avenge them of what Brother Edom had done to them. And so this is what they are saying here in Psalm 137. And speaking about being by the rivers of Babylon, "There we sat down, yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hang our harps upon the willows in the midst of it. For there those who carried us away captive asked of us a song." In other words, they were mocking them. And some of those that have done that were not just native Babylonians, Chaldeans, but they were also Edomites. And so they say here in verse 5, "If I forget you, Jerusalem, let my right hand forget its skill. If I do not remember you, let my tongue cling to the roof of my mouth. if I do not exalt Jerusalem above my chief joy. Now Edom, wanting the birthright, always wanted that land and the city. And to this very day, this is the main issue that they have today, Jerusalem. And Arafat, you know, the PLO chairman, and all the Arab nations, be the Edomites among them and all the others, they said, don't compromise to him about Jerusalem. That's our city, our holy city. And in the old days, in the days of Babylon, when they came and conquered Judah, Edom was very glad to finally see the people of Judah that he hated. Of course, Israel was gone then, the northern kingdom was being devastated and the city was being taken. And here they show their attitude toward the city of Jerusalem in contrast to the feelings of the Jewish captives. And in verse 7, this is exactly what the captives of Judah are asking God to remember, what brother Edom had done to them. And so we read here, remember, O Eternal, against the sons of Edom, the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it to its very foundation. You see, they were expressing the total hatred at brother Jacob. And so, Psalm 37, you can see, it's making it very clear that Edom and Babylon are linked. As they sing about being by the rivers of Babylon, then they ask God to... you see, they didn't say, you know, the people of the Chaldeans said that, or the Babylonians said that, they said Edom said that. Why would Edom say that? They were among the soldiers, and they remembered, as God said in many other places, the old hatred. And they were never willing to forgive Jacob about it, even though now they were far away, were not even on the border. And of course, many of the Edomites were still there at the time. So you can see the link here between these two. And so then in verse 8, now they go back to Babylon, because Edom is also a part of it. And so they say, O daughter of Babylon, who are to be destroyed, that includes the Edomites among them, happy the one who repays you as you have served us. Happy the one who takes and dashes your little ones against the rock. And that's exactly what we're reading here in Isaiah chapter 13 about the fate of Babylon. In verse 16, where we read, their children also will be dashed to pieces before their eyes. And that was a request of the captives of Judah against Babylon, obviously against the people of Edom. And you see the link there between the two. And we read in many places in the Bible where Edom is being brought back into the picture, and sometimes you don't understand why the mention of Edom or Seir is there. But then when you realize the link between these two, then you comprehend what is really happening here, and it is to this very day. Now, most of the land of Iraq today is basically the land of Edom. And that's also a partial fulfillment of the blessing that God gave through Isaac. In spite of Esau, he gave it to Esau, where Isaac told Esau, in essence, the same words that he told Jacob, with the exception that with Jacob he said, may God give you of the dew of heaven or the fatness of the earth. To Esau he said, your dwelling shall be of the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth. And that's exactly what the basin that is called the fertile basin, you know, the Babylonian ancient land, the breadbasket of the world at the time, beside Egypt, that was second breadbasket of the world. But that place, and to this very day, is a very fertile area. It's between the rivers, had lots of water. There's a good, you know, a lot of good land there, agriculture. And that's exactly what Brother Edom ended. Once they moved it toward Babylon, and then, you know, being men of the sword, gradually as Babylon sunk down, you know, they rose up. And of course, ultimately speaking, they were anciently the same people. That's where Abraham came from. And so you see them there to this very day. And there is a purpose for them being there, and there is a purpose for the Persian Gulf conflict there, which is going to be intensified in the future, and also the ultimate destruction that God is going to bring on this area. And when you read many of the descriptions about the destruction of Babylon, and then you read Revelation about the destruction of Babylon there, the spiritual Babylon, you notice the description is the same. Even the wordings oftentimes are the same. Now in the book of again in chapter 14, the book of Isaiah, we read this in chapter 14, verses 1 to 6. For the Lord will have mercy on Jacob, that's at the end time, and will still choose Israel and settle them in their own land. The strangers will be joined with them, and they will cling to the house of Jacob. Now those who are going to repent are the strangers, who are going to turn away from their evil deeds, who are going to recognize the God of Israel and that Israel is his people, and some of them will be former enemies. And so, and some of them, you know, as we read in Obadiah, will be the very remnant of Edom too. As God said that, you know, the widows and the orphans of Edom will be left and will be taken care of by him. And so Israel is going to be the one to take care of them. That's after all brother Esau with all the evil that is in Esau. And so, verse 2 read, then people will take them and bring them to their place, and the house of Israel will possess them for servants and maids in the land of the Lord. See, that's the name of the land. It's not the Arab lands, the Jewish lands, the land of the Lord. And they will take them captive, whose captives they were, and rule over their oppressors. And previously we read where Israel was taken to captivity, the remnant of them. You know, enemy nations nearby. And there will be the ones that obviously will come and live in you know, and become their slaves. We're not talking about people living way out there in, you know, in China, or even as far as many other countries. Speaking about the local natives there, we've taken them into captivity. As we read in Joel chapter 3, they're going to be in Lebanon, they're going to be in Iraq, they're going to be in Iran, they're going to be, you know, here and there. Moab and Ammon in Egypt. These very people, you know, some of them are going to be taken into captivity. And they're going to join them also. It says, you know, they will cling to the house of Jacob, you know, the son of the strangers, because they're going to fear the God of Israel and all the punishment that he's going to bring upon them. And obviously, again, brother Edom will find himself in place of servitude to his younger brother Jacob. And this time he's not going to be rebellious, because the remnants of them are not going to have that contentious attitude or hateful spirit or venomous anger, you know, against brother Jacob. They're going to fear the God of Jacob. They will be returning to the God of their own father, Isaac, the brother, you know, the father of their own father, Esau, or Edom. And so you see, all those things are working together. And so we continue here. It shall come to pass in the day that the Lord gives you rest from your sorrow and from your fear and from the hard bondage in which you were made to serve in the land of the enemy, the land of Edom, the land of other nations in the area and other places, that you will take up this proverb against the king of Babylon. You see? And say, so again, Babylon is here in the picture, how the oppressor has seized the golden city seized. And then you read what we mentioned earlier about the king of Babylon and the attitude of the king of Babylon and the one who is really behind it. And then also with Tyre, it's the same story. And in both of these places, you find to this very day the people of Edom. We're talking about the ancient locations of them. In Tyre, you know, Lebanon, you find a lot of Edomites there, a lot of Palestinians there. And in Babylon, obviously, Iraq, obviously God is using the old names, but, you know, had he been using modern names, he would have said Iraq, he would have said Lebanon, and other modern nations. And so the main thrust here is toward the people who were in the local areas, and of course the satellite countries, you know, that they went into in later times. So you have to take all that into account. But we're trying to point the centrality of the role of Edom in the conflict, as well as other nations who are with him, and showing very plainly that it was mainly an Edom-Jacob conflict and not Ishmael, because Ishmael is not in Babylon, but Edom is. And let's continue now with the words of Jeremiah. Jeremiah was also during the time of the captivity by Babylon, but he also brought this information, preserved it for us to realize that Brother Edom was a part of Babylon, and Brother Edom was involved in the destruction of Judah. And so we read in Lamentation, as he is describing the state of Judah after the destruction or during the destruction. And so he says about, after he speaks about all the nations, and then specific about Babylon, because other nations came with Babylon, but Babylon became an empire, so obviously they had other kings with them, as God even himself said, he's going to bring many of the kings of the area, are going to be allied with Babylon to bring destruction upon Judah, and obviously Edom was one of them. And so in verse 21, chapter 4 of Lamentation, we read, "Rejoice and be glad, O daughter of Edom." Now, mind you, the whole lamentation is about the destruction by Babylon. And yet he's injecting Edom here, just like the captives who were by the river of Babylon. They were bringing the issue of Edom, who was a part of the destroyers of the people of God. And so Jeremiah says, "Rejoice and be glad, O daughter of Edom, you who dwell in the land of Uz." Now, where is Uz? You know, you read about the story of Job, the area from which, in other words, the area in which he lived, speaking about a man who lived in the land of Uz, Utz in Hebrew, and that is in the east, in other words, Babylon. And so this is what Jeremiah is saying here. "Rejoice and be glad, O daughter of Edom, you who dwell in the land of Uz." And the land of Uz is in Babylon, Chaldea. That area, that's what Job wore. So it's basically telling us that Edom came from there, came all the way from Babylon, because they were part of the armies of Babylon, and here they had an opportunity to destroy their brother Jacob, and the vengeance was in their blood, you know, in their vein, and hatred and malice and all that against their own people, and the other ones that said, you know, raise it even to the foundations. You know, they didn't say the Babylonians were the ones that say that, but the people of Edom were among them, who were filled with hatred. You see, and so even the armies of the beast that is coming will have elements of Edom among them, and they are the ones who will have the personal hatred against the people of God. And here, they too would be the ones who would want the destruction of Jerusalem. And so Jeremiah makes it very plain that the people of Edom came from Babylon. And they had been there for a while. They had been there from the days of before the children of Israel even came back to the land. As we mentioned earlier, one of the kings of that reigned over Edom, in Bosra, came actually from Babylon, from Rehovot, which is by the river. That is the river of Euphrates. And so this is where they come from. So you can see the links here. You know, you find a lot of statements here and there that have been preserved, and of course the people of Judah that have been too familiar, you know, with all the scriptures, they understood all these things, and therefore when Rome came and dominated them and crushed them, you know, and afflicted them and oppressed them, they called them Edom. You see, not just as an idiom or a personal description in terms of feelings, but literally. Because the spirit of Edom was there, because people of, you know, some of the elements of Edom were among them. And to begin with, Herod, who was an Edomite, was a Roman citizen. And so was his father. And so you see the link there between these two, and to this very day you see the link there. And that's why, you know, the scriptures are written in such a way that those who are wise can understand, put all things together. And so Jeremiah makes it very plain. The people of Edom that came to fight against Judah with the king, you know, the king of Babylon, were not just local natives that were left behind of the Edomites, but they came all the way from Babylon. And that's exactly what he said. "You daughter of Edom." You see? Edom had many nations, many peoples, 14 dukes. So he's speaking specific about those people that came from Edom. "You who dwell in the land of Oz or Uz or Utz, the cup shall also pass over to you, and you shall become drunk and make yourself naked. The punishment of your iniquity is accomplished. O daughter of Zion, he will no longer send you into captivity. He will punish your iniquity, O daughter of Edom. He will uncover your sins. And that's in essence what the captives of Judah were saying in Psalm 137 and verse 7. That as they have done to the people of God, to the people of Judah, to their own brother, so God will do to them. And so as we read in Isaiah chapter 14 about the punishment of Babylon, you see exactly the same description there. And it's not a coincidence. And in chapter 63, we read that earlier, but let's have a little repetition here for sake of linking these two. When God speaks about the destruction he's going to bring on Edom, he's presenting it in such a way that you get the idea there that the main battle that he's going to have as he comes down would be with Edom. Now, elsewhere, you read it's Babylon. In Revelation, you read it's Babylon. Well, here God specifically says that it is Edom. In other words, he's linking the two. And so this is what you read in Isaiah 63. Who is this who comes from Edom with dyed garments from Bozrah? This one who is glorious in his apparel, traveling in the greatness of his strength, or traveling, I who speak in righteousness, mighty to save. This is what God is saying. And so the prophet is asking him, why is your apparel red and your garments like one who trades in the winepress? And that's exactly what you read in Revelation. When he comes to destroy Babylon, this is the description that you find there. And so verse 3 says, I have trodden the winepress alone, and from the peoples no one was with me. For I have trodden them in my anger and trampled them in my fury. Their blood is sprinkled upon my garments, and I stained all my robes. For the day of vengeance is in my heart, and the year of my redeemed has come. Now when you go to Revelation and you read about the day of the Lord, and the destruction is going to bring upon Babylon, you read exactly the same description. And there you read Babylon, and here you read Edom. Why is it so? Because God is linking the two together, because they are physically and spiritually linked. That's the reason for it. And we continue here. So he says, the year of my redeemed has come. Verse 4, and then I looked, but there was no one to help. In other words, when God went out to war, there was no nation on the face of the earth that was on his side to deliver his people and to bring destruction on the evil ones, on the wicked empire. And I wondered, or the evil empire, as President Reagan used to call a certain empire, speaking about another one, obviously. And I wondered, and there was no one to uphold. Therefore my own arm brought salvation for me, and my own fury it sustained me. I have trodden down the peoples in my anger, made them drunk in my fury, and brought down their strength to the earth. Now when you go to the book of Revelation, in chapter 14, and there you read about the destruction that God is going to bring upon Babylon, you know, the people from whom God says is going to require the blood of all of his martyrs, all of his saints. And this is what we read about them in Revelation 14. You read about the destruction that is coming upon Edom. We read about God in chapter 1. That's the Lamb now. This is the God of Israel coming down with 144,000 with him. And then verse 7, we read about the angel who says with a loud voice, fear God and give glory to him, speaking about all the nations who are still rebellious against God. He says, for the hour of his judgment has come, and worship him who made heaven and earth and sea and springs of water. Another angel followed saying, Babylon is fallen, is fallen. See, why is he bringing Babylon into Revelation 17? See, because of the link. And when you go through the prophets, then you begin to understand the link between the two. And when you understand the identity of Edom, you understand also the link between them and Babylon. It's not that they are all Babylon, that all Babylon is Edomites. But they're very instrumental in this system, both religiously being champions of that, of these two false religions, you know, one is in the West, and the part of Edom that remained behind championed the false religion of the East. And the man that was the prophet that originated this whole thing was raised in the territory that belonged to Edom, in the area of Mecca and Medina. You see, this whole territory was Edomite. It was not Ishmaelite. It was not the children of Ishmael who were more into the desert, but the people along the coast were basically Edomites. That's not a coincidence. And so when God speaks about Babylon, he can speak about both of them, the East and West. You know, the two legs, so to speak. And then a third angel followed them, and so he's speaking about Babylon that is going to fall, and she was made in verse 8, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she has made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Well, anyway, we are reaching the end here of this lesson, so we're going to stop here. This is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people.